CBS Sports, a couple of articles that we're going to discuss, including a way too early 2023 NFL mock draft that has a Tennessee Volunteer in the first round. Who is it? We'll tell you, and we'll revisit the 2017-18 coaching carousel around college football, what they said about the coaches then compared to now. Mike Wilson will jump on as well. This is your Thursday Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody, and welcome into Locked On Vols, your team every single day. Thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. It is your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast weekday mornings when you wake up on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. I'm your host, Eric Kane. That's where you can find me on Twitter, @_Kaner and @LockedOnVols. We got a fun show, as I said, in the cold open. We're gonna visit some CBS Sports articles. They turn out a lot of talking points for me, so I'm very appreciative of that. And then we'll catch up with Mike Wilson talking Tennessee baseball in segment number three. Hey, quick reminder, if you listen on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, whichever YouTube, whichever avenue that's you listen or watch this show, please leave me a review. Write me 5 stars if you're a fan of the show, and I will very much appreciate that. Anything to help the algorithms, help Locked On Vols shoot up the charts whenever you're searching your Tennessee content, that is very, very much appreciated. Can't thank you enough. All right, so let's get into it. If you guys listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal, where I, that's my 9 to 5, but that is my Monday through Saturday job. And of course, I write for the rival side covering Tennessee, VolQuest.com. But if you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal, specifically my show, the show that I'm a part of, not my show, the show that I'm a part of in the mornings, 6 to 9 a.m., the starting lineup with Tyler Ivins and Will West. You know, we've discussed this a couple of times. So, and I like to recycle the content a lot because I do my part in show programming for that show as well as here, and there's things that I kind of use for both, and we've talked about it a ton over there, and we might have mentioned it a time or two here, but we're going to dive into it a little deeper today. It's May, right? And we're 11 months away from the 2023 NFL mock draft. It's still a college football season to go, so why not go ahead and start doing some mock NFL drafts, right? I mean, there's still so much we don't know. It's truly a guess at this point. And boy, there have been some daring, some hot takey type guesses, hypothesis spinning over at CBSSports.com. So the latest one that was released earlier this week, this is from, I believe it's from Jack Becerro, and my screen is freezing up right now, so I will I'll get that the author actual to you here in just one moment. But according to this CBS Sports article, Chris Chapasso. You have Will Levis of Kentucky going number one overall. You have a Tennessee Volunteer in the first round, and I'm starting with this because this is just even more shocking in my opinion, right? Will Levis, he's got all the intangibles. He's an athlete. He can run. He's got a cannon for an arm, and he's 6'3", 235. He will play in the NFL. I don't know if he'll be a starter. I don't know if he'll last on 10 years. But he'll get drafted and he'll play in the NFL. He's not a bad quarterback. I'm not saying that, but Will Levis of Kentucky, number one overall. Excuse me? What? You know, keep in mind, guys, Bryce Young's in this draft class. C.J. Stroud of Ohio State is in this draft class. You have Will Anderson of Alabama is in this draft class. You've got, so many other top-flight prospects who are in this draft class, but according to this way too early mock draft here in May from CBS Sports Radio earlier, or CBSSports.com earlier this week, you have Will Levis being drafted number one overall to the Houston Texans in next year's draft. Now, it's all fun and games. It's good talking points and everything. And, of course, the draft order, it's just done on percentages and everything, probabilities. I mean, who knows if the Texans will be drafting first next year? We don't know. It's probably a good guess, but we don't know. But let that sink in. Will Levis, your number one overall pick. Okay, we'll move down. Jalen Carter of Georgia, the defensive lineman, would be the number two pick. Okay, C.J. Stroud, the quarterback, the second quarterback off the board of Ohio State. He's going three overall to the Lions. You move down a couple of spots. Bryce Young of Alabama would go number five overall to the Giants. There's Will Anderson Jr., who in my opinion will be the top pick in next year's draft. Should have been the defensive representative at the Heisman Trophy presentation this past year and not Aiden Hutchinson. Will Anderson Jr., 6'4", 250, just a freaking stud from Alabama. He's being taken 6 overall by the Chicago Bears. Tyler Van Dyke, the next quarterback off the board, the fourth quarterback here in the top 10, seventh overall to the Carolina Panthers. And then you go on down, you see some other names that kind of stick out to you. Eric Gilbert of Georgia, 13th overall to the Eagles, listed as a wide receiver, but again, he's playing more tight end now. You got a couple of other SEC players. You're moving on down here, but let me bring you to pick number 20 of the first round. The Indianapolis Colts are on the clock. Okay, again, 2023, way too early. NFL mock draft from CBS Sports. With the 20th pick in the first round of the 2023 NFL draft, CBSSports.com has the Indianapolis Colts selecting Tennessee's Darnell Wright. Darnell Wright, offensive tackle, again, University of Tennessee. Now, Darnell Wright, we knew, you know, he came in with a lot of pub. He and Wanya Morris, the 2 5-star offensive tackles, a part of the 2019 draft or 2019 signing class. Your 2020 signing class, they all run together at this point. Those two guys started from day one. If you remember, Darnell Wright was a guy that was not an early enrollee. He did not have a spring practice. He came in the summer and earned a spot in fall camp and rolled out there. Wanya Morris was here for spring practice that year. But Darnell Wright's always been, he's had the higher upside, if you will. And he struggled his first 2 years at Tennessee. Let's not make any ifs, ands, or buts about it. He struggled. He was overweight. He was too slow. He didn't have good feet. He allowed a lot of sacks. He was not great in the run game, playing right tackle. But this past year, he made the switch to left tackle, which was kind of shocking to me because, again, if you're not, you know, if you don't have good enough feet to play right tackle, what makes you think you can protect your quarterback's blind side, right? Well, he played pretty well. Was he perfect? Absolutely not. But he played pretty well on the left side this year. Might even move back and play right tackle again this fall, depending on the progression of J.J. Crawford and Gerald Mincy. But Darnell Wright slimmed up a little bit, lost some weight. He mentioned at one of the media availabilities, and I probably should go back and look up this quote to make sure I'm right here, but I want to say that he was about 350 pounds at one point. But he came back. He dedicated the work in the weight room and the conditioning, got his body down to about 320. And he might be around 330 right now, but, you know, slimmed up a little bit and got better. And he really played well this past season. So you knew that if it could click for Darnell Wright, that he could be the first volunteer off the board. That, remember, guys, I mean, this next year's draft class will have Hendon Hooker, Cedric Tillman, a couple of other guys on the offensive side of the football that will be draft eligible. On defense, Byron Young will be draft eligible. Jeremy Banks will be draft eligible. Jalen McCullough, Trayvon Flowers, a couple of these other defensive backs as well. So Tyler Barron. So there's a lot of names of guys who have played an awful lot who will be draft eligible this time next year. But Darnell Wright, we always knew that if it could click for him, he could be the number one overall pick for Tennessee, or the first Tennessee volunteer off the board, if I'm just saying that. So I'm not surprised that he's the first Tennessee player off the board in this exercise, but I'm so surprised that it's in the first round. Again, this is all a guess, but that's good to see, right? I think if he comes in and has another solid year and even improves and takes a step, he could be knocking on the door of a night one draft pick, but I still think this is a really round 2-3 type guy if I'm talking right now. But I found that very, very interesting. Darnell Wright in this way too early 2023 NFL mock draft by CBS Sports. Darnell Wright, 20th overall to the Indianapolis Colts. You know they like that run game with Jonathan Taylor. They have a history of finding some good offensive linemen. Post-Andrew Luck era, I mean, they ruined Andrew Luck's career, which is a shame. But since Andrew Luck was, you know, I guess you learn your lesson, right? You don't have a Ferrari and park it on the road, right? They've drafted some good offensive linemen. So, you know, kudos to them. But nonetheless, this would kind of fit the bill for the Indianapolis Colts if a Darnell Wright type guy. You move on. Darnell Wright's 20th overall. Jordan Addison, the, you know, current free agents, you know, wide receiver, if you want to call him that. He's in the transfer portal. He's being selected 22nd overall by the Cincinnati Bengals in this exercise. You've got Zay Flowers at Boston College, who's a standout wide receiver, smaller guy, 25th overall. And, you know, really that's about all the name recognition. Oh, we have one more guy at the tail end of the draft who had to be reminded that is draft eligible because he was a redshirt quarterback freshman in 2020. Anthony Richardson of Florida. Excuse me. Can he put it together? If he can, he has all the intangibles. We know that. He's got good frame, 6'4", 236. He's 2 inches, about an inch and a half taller than Will Levis. He can hold the weight a little bit better as well because of that height. If Anthony Richardson of Florida can put it together, again, it wouldn't shock me at all. His ceiling is so much higher, in my opinion, than Will Levis, in my opinion, than a Spencer Rattler. Bryce Young is still the most talented guy. He's got a bazooka of an arm. He's just kind of smaller like Kyler Murray. But again, the NFL has shown that they don't care about that anymore. They'll take chances and they'll draft some smaller quarterbacks. But Anthony Richardson potentially could slide in there if he has a breakout year. But again, he hasn't really done anything so far in college, at least on a consistent level. So fun exercise to kind of do here. But at the end of the day, this is nothing but a guess. Interesting stuff to talk about, especially when a Tennessee Volunteer is on the board in one of these, Darnell Wright at number 20 to the Colts. So that was one of the CBS Sports articles that we're going to recap today on a Thursday Locked On Vols. A way too early draft prediction to have Will Levis number one overall. Shocking to me. That will not happen. We'll come back with another article from CBS Sports, revisiting the 2017 coaching carousel. That was a wild one, and of course, Tennessee was very much a part of that one. That's coming up next here on Locked On Vols. But first, hey, this episode is brought to you in part by Rock Auto. The ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain of auto parts store to stock up on all the parts that you need. So why endure the often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning that comes from the person behind the counter as they search through their computer for only the parts and brands that their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers and you have access to rockauto.com through your phone. It's right in your pocket. Save time and money with rockauto.com. Why choose to spend up to 30 to 50, sometimes even 100% more for the same parts of your chain store or your dealership when you can do it at rockauto.com? It's a family business, family-owned business, serving it to professionals and do-it-yourselfers online for 20 years. The prices are always so reliably low for every single customer. It doesn't matter who you are. You, right now, can go and explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to all of your auto part needs. So right now, if you're having any type of issues with your car or your truck, go to rockauto.com and find the parts available for your car or your truck. Right Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit my friends at rockauto.com. Welcome back in here to a Thursday edition of Locked On Vols. I'm your host, Eric Kane. As always, thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen. I guess we can just kind of coin the CBS Sports Day because they're giving me some great talking points. We chatted way too early 2023 NFL mock drafts in segment one. We got Mike Wilson coming up in segment three to discuss Tennessee baseball, beginning a series against Georgia tonight at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. And now let's bring it back home and let's revisit the 2017 college football coaching carousel. So CBSSports.com is revisiting that carousel, and they graded these coaches upon hiring. They're going to go back, add a little description, and they're going to grade them again 4 years out. So, you know, which coaches stand out amongst them, the coaches that are in place, the coaches that got fired, Jeremy Pruitt, or the coaches that were hired away. They break them down into these kind of situations. We'll go ahead and start. We won't bury the lead here. We will go down to the section to where coaches who were fired or resigned and no longer in place. And we will say what we will read off what CBS Sports has to say about Jeremy Pruitt. Jeremy Pruitt in three seasons, 16-19 was his overall record. His accomplishments, bowl games, .. Well, they say that because 2020, Tennessee was eligible to go to a bowl game despite a 3-7 season. In 2018, they were not. In 2019, they did go bowling, a win over Indiana in 2020. Despite the 3-7 record, we're going to go play in the Liberty Bowl, but of course that was called off due to COVID. So they say bowl games, too, kinda. Here's what CBS Sports has to say, and of course Tom Farinelli wrote this piece on revisiting the 2017 coaching carousel. So here's what they have to say about Jeremy Pruitt. Considering the carnival atmosphere of the coaching search that found him, Tennessee hiring Jeremy Pruitt seemed like a win at the time. He had been the defensive coordinator at Alabama and was a competent recruiter. Unfortunately, whether it's on Pruitt or others, a hiring made amid a circus seemed doomed from the start. After going 5-7 in 2018, the Vols began 2019 with home losses to Georgia State and BYU. We all remember that, right? While they recovered to finish 8-5, went on a little bit of a winning streak in that season to get to a bowl game, it always felt like some in Knoxville were determined to get Pruitt out of town. They succeeded after the 2020 season when they learned of recruiting violations the school discovered on its own. The original grade from CBS Sports gave Tennessee's hiring of Jeremy Pruitt a B at the time. No shocker here. Looking back, that grade has turned into an F. So Jeremy Pruitt given an F. Obviously, any of these coaches in this section were fired are going to get a worse grade upon their arrival. So, you know, Jeremy Pruitt, the stint at Tennessee, obviously was not a good one. Josh Heupel now successful year number one, all things considered, 7-5 regular season, 7-6 total with a loss in the the Music City Bowl to Purdue, working on year number two, and you know should have again one of the more exciting and you know formidable offenses. Not only in the SEC, but in the country. So we'll have to see what year two has for Josh Heupel. Other coaches who were in this fire category, CBS Sports talks about Dan Mullen, 34-15 record, his accomplishments, an SEC East title, a New Year's Six bowl games, three of which, and bowl games overall, four. And the original grade they gave him was an A. They went back and said it was a B-. That just kind of goes to show you that, you know, what the SEC is. You have Dan Mullen, who was 34-15, went to three New Year's Six bowl games, won an SEC, played for an opportunity to win an SEC championship. And if not for Alabama, which, you know, Florida had the year of all years in 2020, and if not for Alabama, which was just even better, you know, they would have won a conference championship, but did not. Gave the original grade hiring an A, and now it was a B- going back and looking at it. Willie Taggart at Florida State, 9-12 during his tenure. Original grade was an A. That grade is an F, no shocker there. Chad Morris of Arkansas, record of 4-18. Original grade from CBS Sports was a B+. That grade was an F, obviously. Matt looks a little bit different here, okay? He went 15-21. His major accomplishment, he won the 2017 Egg Bowl over Mississippi State. This is what they say about Matt Luke. It's a hire that felt doomed from the start. Luke was named the program's interim coach for the 2017 season after Hugh Freeze was forced to resign after using a school-issued phone to call an escort service a little over a month before the season started. The Rebels were also dealing with the possibility of an NCAA sanctions, so when they beat Mississippi State to end the season at 6-6, they self-imposed a bowl ban. Luke had the interim tag removed. Still, it always felt like a stopgap until a sexier option came along, obviously, and Luke went 9-15 and 3-13 in the SEC over the next 2 years. That sexier option was Lane Kiffin. Luke won a national title at Georgia as a Georgia assistant head coach on the offensive line in 2021. The original grade was a C. The grade now, looking back on it, was a C-. Again, I'm with CBS Sports. That was kind of doomed from the get-go. Never really gave him an opportunity. Remember Joe Moorhead, right? 14-12 at Mississippi State amongst its two seasons. He did go to two bowl games. Original grade was an A. The offensive coordinator from Penn State's looking back, it is a C+. So that's kind of fun to play that game. So those were the coaches led off by Jeremy Pruitt that were fired or resigned. Coaches that were hired away. Remember, Josh Heupel was a part of that 2017 coaching carousel, going from Missouri's offensive coordinator and being hired at UCF to replace Scott Frost. 28-8 was the record for Josh Heupel at UCF. His accomplishments, conference title, one of those, and went to three bowl games. And he was 2018 FWAA. That's Football Writers of America Association First Year Coach of the Year. The original grade was a C-. The grade at the end of it was a B. Here's what they said about Josh Heupel revisiting that coaching carousel of 2017 and looking back on it now. Here's what CBS Sports had to say about Heupel's time at UCF. Heupel started in a position of replacing Scott Frost at UCF, but he did pretty well, all things considered. Any UCF fan who believed that the program would be able to keep rolling off undefeated seasons and major bowl berths, that was asking too much. I completely agree with that. But gripes about the team regressing each season are justified. We've talked a lot about this on this show. We can revisit that this summer as well. After going 12-1 and winning the American in Heupel's first season, the Knights went 10-3 in 2019 and were 6-4 in 2020 before Heupel left to join his former athletic director, Danny White, at Tennessee. There were a lot of things that went into that 2020 season, like how Heupel had to kick off a couple starters on the defensive side of the football for some shenanigans off the field. So that's what they had to say about Josh Heupel. Again, original grade a C-. When it's all said and done, a B. A couple other coaches who were hired in that cycle but have since been hired away. Billy Napier at Louisiana went 40-12. Two Sun Belt titles, four Sun Belt West titles, four bowl games, 2019 and 2021 Sun Belt Coach of the Year. Of course, that grade is an A+ after being originally graded as a B. Mario Cristobal, 35-13 at Oregon, Pac-12 championship two times, won his division three times, four bowl games, 2019 Pac-12 Coach of the Year. That grade was an A now after originally being graded as a C+. And a couple other coaches who are still in place after, you know, originally, or who are still in place following that 2017 cycle. Jimbo Fisher at A&M, 34-14. He's been to four bowl games. He's been AP top five finisher in the 2020 season. Let's see here. Scott Frost is 15-29 at Nebraska, but he's a dead man walking. Accomplishments so far, greatest three-win team in college football playoff history in 2021. you got Chip Kelly, who is still at UCLA, amidst an 18-25 record so far. He's been to one bowl game. And Herm Edwards, let's see here. Herm Edwards is still in place as well, 25-18. They gave that grade an F originally, and now it is a C-. I didn't give you the grades for these other ones here of CBS Sports. Scott Frost, the grade, if you remember, it was like winning the Super Bowl getting Scott Frost. They gave it an A back in 2017. It is certainly a D right now. And Jimbo Fisher, they gave that an A, and it's a B+. Again, you're still waiting for Texas A&M to break through there. So some fun exercises to talk about. Thanks, CBSSports.com, for the talking points here on the podcast. Very much Vol-centric. Tennessee's in both of these little articles here, the mock draft we did in segment one, and revisiting the 2017 coaching carousel for the Tennessee Volunteers and the rest of college football. So hope you guys enjoyed that. I thought that was kind of fun and some things to chat about. We'll chat about Tennessee baseball coming up next here. Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel will join the show. That's coming up next here to conclude a Thursday edition of Locked On Vols. Stick around. We got a final segment left here on this edition of Locked On Vols, your Thursday edition. As always, thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. Tennessee baseball got back on track in a midweek affair yesterday against Bellarmine. And we're going to bring on Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel, to chat a little Tennessee baseball. Mike, what's up, dude?
Not a lot, man. Got a baseball shirt on, ready to talk baseball, always ready.
There we go. All right, so Tennessee baseball, very underwhelming weekend. Last weekend, you were there. You wasted your Thursday, your Friday, and your Saturday in Lexington, Kentucky. It was cold, it was chilly, it was rainy, and Tennessee did not perform well. Did pick up a win against Bellarmine in the midweek affair. Now playing host to a really good Georgia team. What can you tell us about the Georgia Bulldogs as Tennessee looks to wrap up the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, offense is definitely their brand. Tony Vitello talked about the other night. They're a team that, you know, a lot of veteran bats, I think, is kind of the knowledge on them. So guys who've been through the SEC, been through the grind, know what it takes to compete at the plate in this league. Pitching's not their strength. Jonathan Cannon, their usual second starter, is a big-time prospect, big-time pitcher. That's definitely the best arm that Georgia has, but yeah, it's kind of at the plate deal for this Georgia team. They've had success, man. I mean, they're right there, second in the SEC East behind Tennessee, which obviously ran away with it and clinched it. But yeah, Georgia's right there.
What can you tell us about the pitching rotation this weekend? Tennessee announced that Chase Dolander is going to get the start on Thursday. Typically, that's a Chase Burns. At least he's the quote-unquote Friday night starter, the game one starter. But looks like it's going to go Dolander, and then Blake Tidwell is going to get the nod in game two on Friday. One of the freshmen going to get some much-needed rest right now. Any knowledge on who that might be and kind of your overall thoughts on the starters this weekend?
Yeah, I love it. I actually was on a different show this afternoon, and this was before that came out, and I kind of got asked, what would you do with the pitching this weekend? And I said I would start Chase Dolander on Thursday. And it's obvious to me he's got the freshest arm right now coming off that couple weeks of injury. I also think he's their best starting pitcher, and I think he's been their most consistent guy throughout the season. You kind of know what you're going to get every week, except for that Baylor start for him. I think kind of every week's been pretty much the same. So that's big. And I think it's really, really valuable to get a little bit of rest for Burns and Beam, if not both. I think you haven't really seen that dominant level from Chase Burns in the past few weeks. Still very good, not bad by any means, but this hasn't been as dominant, I don't think. And Drew Beam, kind of that same bill, obviously has had some tremendous starts, a long string of quality starts, but he's a pitch to contact guy whose velocity isn't in the mid 90s right now. It's been lower 90s. And when you're a strike throwing pitch to contact guy, you're going to get hit a little bit more at that point. So I think getting both those guys rest, seeing how fresh you can keep them, because Tennessee has a lot of season left in their minds. I mean, they want to be playing till the end of June. And if you're going to play till the end of June, you've got to have that pitching fresh.
Yeah, and that's a good point too. And if I were doing it, I would have, you know, tried to rest one of the two freshmen this weekend, rest the other one a little bit more the following weekend, because again, there's worry though. These guys are true freshmen. They've never thrown this many innings before. Drew Beam is a guy that hasn't really thrown hardly at all in 2 years, and now he's made every single start in the SEC up until potentially this weekend. What's been the measures that Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson have put in place to kind of protect against that? You know, Dolander's used to it a little bit. Blake Tidwell had it last year, but of course he's got a fresh arm as well because his innings have been down this year. But what are the restrictor plates, if you will, that have been put into place for those two freshmen that, you know, kind of help them for this time of the year with, as you pointed out, hopefully a lot more season left?
Yes, it's funny. I'm gonna be nice to myself here and pat myself on the back. After the Vanderbilt series, when Drew Beam threw the complete game, that was the question I asked Tony Vitello that week, because my only concern about the Tennessee baseball team at that point was, does the young starting pitching wear down? With two freshmen in Chase Burns and Drew Beam, neither of whom has been through this grind. And Chase Dolander only threw 43 innings last year at Georgia Southern too. I mean, he hasn't gone through this depth either. Will that pitching wear down? And Tony talked about the way that Frank Anderson smartly brings pitchers along through January and February. It's not all right, 9 innings opening weekend, get ready to go, guys. You're going to throw 9 innings every game all year. It's a slow progression throughout the preseason and then early in the season as well. So that was the comment to that point. Obviously, it seems like there's either a pivot just right now of getting some rest, or it's a stack the rotation with how you like it in the postseason. I mean, it could be either. But yeah, I think it's smart for the coaching staff to get those guys a little bit of a rest. Even if they both throw on Saturday in this series against Georgia, you've given them extra rest. At least in the case of Chase Burns, you've given him extra rest. So I think that's a valuable thing for Tennessee to have right now.
Look at that lineup, and you know Trey Lipscomb has been just incredible all season long. Jordan Beck has been really, really good. Drew Gilbert has come along really, really nicely here of late. And you know the veterans, of course, Evan Russell. And then there's been some guys who have stepped up: Jarrell Ortega, Christian Moore, points in times; Jared Dickey, points in times. But channeling back in on a Trey Lipscomb, I mean, what's been so great about his approach at the plate this year? A guy that has stayed the course and is likely going to be drafted. And I mean, he's in contention for the Golden Spikes right now. He's been that good in the middle of the order and among, you know, top 5, top 10 of the nation leaders in home runs and RBI so far this year.
Yeah, I kind of wrote about that a couple weeks ago just with Trey. And he talks so much about the mentality of slowing down in the box. He said as a freshman, he looks back at those clips. I think he had 14, 17 at bats, got one hit. He said he looked like he was rushing to the plate and was almost eager to just get out. And he talked about this approach of slowing down. And you watch him now. I mean, he gets to the plate so slowly that umpires are oftentimes going, get in the box, like, let's go. I mean, that's just kind of how he is at this point. He's always had the talent. I don't think that's been questioned by anyone other than Troy Provo-Heron, who for some reason believed that Trey Lipscomb was not a superstar or even good at all, apparently, which makes no sense. But if you know Troy, it does make sense. Yeah, I mean, Trey, he's got 19 homers. He's been an absolute monster. I don't know if he's still on pace for the home run and RBI records this season, but he's certainly in that conversation still. I mean, hitting 20 home runs in an SEC situation is really impressive. He's got 19 right now. So it's really funny to look at because he's probably getting drafted higher than Jake Rucker did last year. And Jake Rucker was an absolutely phenomenal cornerstone, number 3 hitter staple for Tennessee. But Trey Lipscomb's having that caliber of year that he's going to be drafted probably between where Andre Lipsius and Jake Rucker were, the two guys who played before him.
Last thing here with Mike Wilson, Knox and Juice Sentinel covering Tennessee baseball. And I'm glad you explained the whole Troy situation there. I had one of my buddies that listens to this show every single day, and he texted me and said, hey, why do they always tag Troy in their tweets? And I was like, is it about Lipscomb? And I'm like, well, Troy probably said something in the preseason or last year about him not being good. And so every time he does something well, you just got to remind him, just like Wes Rucker's 43 years old. So
he is 43 years old. Don't let him tell you differently.
Tennessee, Georgia, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It'll be Chase Dolander on Thursday tonight. It'll be Blake Tidwell on Friday, and then TBD on either Burns or Beam on Saturday. Hey, last thing, man, you look at some of these players who are just fighting to get at bats. And that's when it's just an embarrassment of riches, right? Tennessee could potentially lose a ton of its starting nine. You know, you bring back the pitching, which is fantastic, which is why you're going to be in contention again next year. But you look at that starting nine, there's been some different variations, of course, just because the team has such good depth. But when you look at what could return next year, guys like Blake Burke, who hit his seventh home run the other night, I believe, of the season, a guy that just can't find at bats anywhere. You know, Seamstra, some of these other guys, Christian Moore, Dickey will be back. This program is positioned to not only do what it's doing this year, but also years to come with Tony Botello.
Yeah, I think what's exciting about Tennessee for next season is the pitching. Obviously, they return the whole rotation, excluding Blade Tidwell, who's been in and out of it, obviously. Returning that is a huge thing. You've got a backbone of a team right there, and you're talking about two potential future number one picks in Chase Dolander and Chase Burns. So that's huge. There are definitely going to be some interesting battles positionally next year. And that's something that's very intriguing to watch. But I think you kind of see Christian Moore, Blake Burke are probably that 3-4 type guys in the lineup, maybe 4-5. But I think in an ideal world, Blake Burke is in the 3 or 4 hole. Jared Dickey's back, as you mentioned. Kyle Booker to me is a guy that's got to take a leap. I think you've got to see him become a star for Tennessee because he's got that ability. It's kind of been seen already. Got to address catcher. That's going to be a big, big one for this team is addressing the catcher position because Evan Russell's gone and Charlie Taylor just hasn't really shown he can consistently perform at the plate yet. So you kind of got to figure out that position, but yeah, there's some excitement there. And obviously this staff can recruit and is going to continue to do so.
Mike Wilson, Knox News. Hey, well, what's coming up? What's some of the work you got coming up? And of course you'll be covering Tennessee this weekend with Georgia.
Well, I would tune in. I'm assuming this posts on Friday.
Thursday. Yeah.
Well, there might be a story on Knox News tonight about the evolution of Ben Joyce.
Okay. There we go. And he's everybody's favorite pitcher, the fireman across college baseball.
Mm-hmm. There might be a story tonight on Knox News. Yeah.
Mike Wilson, Knox News Sentinel. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
All right. As always, great stuff there from Mike Wilson. Really appreciate him. Does a fantastic job covering Tennessee athletics, Tennessee basketball, Tennessee baseball. Covers a little Tennessee football as well. You know that Ben McKee is our guy. But we like to get different voices on the show. And Mike is a voice you guys have heard and seen, of course, on YouTube quite some time here on this podcast. That's going to do it here for this edition of Locked On Vols. We'll have John Garcia on tomorrow's show to talk a little Tennessee recruiting and a whole lot more. A reminder, guys, there will be no show on Monday of next week. I'm going to be out of town. I'll be unable to record on Thursday or on Sunday when I return. So there will be no Locked On Vols YouTube or audio platform on Monday, but we will be back Tuesday and we won't be missing a day from there on out. So I apologize for the inconvenience, but just want to let you guys be prepared. No show coming up on Monday. First day back past the weekend. Guys, thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen. As always, make Locked On SEC with Chris Gordy your second listen right after Locked On Vols each and every morning. This is Locked On Vols, your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast, available every single weekday morning on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. We'll do it again tomorrow, guys, but until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.